Today is April 1st, 1985. My name is Tika Ward. I am at 2934 Grinstead Drive, Louisville, Kentucky. I am interviewing Amelia Davisman, Melanie Davisman, and A.A. Davisman. Our topic is Lou Tate and the Little Loom House. As we begin, Melanie, A.A., Amelia, I want you all to tell just a little bit about each of yourselves. Melanie.
I'm a microcomputer facility coordinator at Coopers and Lybrand, and I'm planning on getting married in August. I graduated from college about 2 years ago.
Okay, I'm a junior at Bellarmine College studying Business Administration Economics. I work at the main library downtown and at the library at U of L.
I'm Amelia, and I'm a branch head at the Newman Branch Library for the Louisville Free Public Library. And I'm A. Melanie's mother. What other information do you want?
Tell me when you all first heard of Lou Tate.
Well, I came, I didn't grow up in Louisville. And after I came to Louisville, I had always wanted to leave again because I had Louisville as a child. And so I heard of her in the early 60s, and the kids and I went out there. I think they were preschoolers. They might have been in school, but I think they were preschoolers. And that's how it started.
What are your all's memories of the Little Loom House, the cabins?
Okay. The one thing I can remember as a child, I was really small. I can remember it was a long walk up a gravel road to the cabins. There were three cabins. The lower one we never went in, that was her house. The middle one we sometimes went in, it was more storage as I can remember. It just wasn't used that much. And the upper house was used a lot. That's where all the looms were and the yarn to weave with. And in back of the cabins was wooded area that we used to go back and climb on the rocks and all that kind of stuff.
I can remember that it always seemed to be in like a little different world because it was on top of a mountain, so you went up the mountain and you kind of felt like you were getting out of the city, and then you had to climb up the road, like she was saying, to get to the houses. And they were older, not real modern, like the house that we would live in, more modern.
There was no indoor plumbing in the
No indoor plumbing. You had to go, they had an outhouse, and it's probably the only time I've ever seen an outhouse. So you always went to the bathroom before you went to avoid having to go to the outhouse. But it was an interesting experience, and it was totally different from how the type of atmosphere that you lived in. It was like you were getting away from that also.
Would you all go there for an open house, or what kind of weaving lessons?
The first time we went out there, we went to an open house.
Yeah. And after that, it just seemed like we were there. I don't remember why we were there.
Well, we went
all
out there
the time.
Yeah, we went out there
weekly.
A lot.
Yeah. It seemed like we were always going out there.
Right.
Yeah. Would there be other children there, too?
I think so. Yeah, they were, because the March's kids were there.
Sometimes.
And the Dennis's kids were there. Kids.
But not every time you went.
No.
Sometimes you were the only kids
right.
there. Right.
Did you take lessons directly from Lou Tate?
Yeah. I can remember her, she always told me I knew how to put colors together well. Because she'd have a box with, I guess they would be like oatmeal things in them, and they had the shuttles already with the yarn on them, and you could go and pick out which ones you want to use. Then I remember when my cousin got married, I wove what would you call it, a hand towel? And I wove the basic part of it, and then when I got to the end, she put in the part, I guess it said my cousin's name or the date or something, and she wove that part.
Had you ever woven before?
Not before we went out there.
We didn't get the looms from my mother until afterwards. Yeah. So I remember that well.
As children, what was your all's impression of the little loom itself?
That was neat.
It didn't seem so little when we were that teeny tiny. I mean, to us, it wasn't that little of a loom. I can, once we got older and Mom brought a big lens here, then that was something bigger. But to me, it was always seemed like it was enough to handle as a small kid.
Yeah, I remember the tables were really heavy that they sat on. I never, you know, I guess being around them so much, I was never that awestruck by them. You know, when we demonstrated at the fair, I was like, oh, she's so little, look at her doing that, you know. But I never...
Came naturally. Yeah.
It never occurred to you to be intimidated?
No.
Mm-hmm. You know, they always wove presents for their grandmother. And, both their grandmothers wove things for
Christmas presents.
Potholders. At, I believe that yardstick holder you've got now was your grandmother's that you wove. And you still got a little vest that you wove, and scarves, and the pillow. It was a pillow for your grandmother that you wove for.
You wove that green and blue, with the tassels on it.
Yeah. Green and gold.
Yeah.
Yellow and blue.
Oh, well.
I got that one that's still sitting on my couch now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think the fact that your mother knew how to weave made you think you would be able to know how to weave?
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't have occurred to me.
I don't think it ever occurred to us that we wouldn't know how. It was...
Yeah.
What did you...
I learned how to spin before she did.
It's all about it.
The sit-down wheel, the flax wheel, I learned how to spin on that before she did.
Before your mother did.
Right, before my mother. The walking wheel was a little bit harder for me because I was so small. But the... flax wheel. That's what I was doing on the videotape.
Was this at one of the open houses?
We had a spinning bee, and Brother Kim Malloy from St. Meinrad's and Sarah Bailey came. And we all took lessons at the same time, and sure enough, they caught on a lot faster than I did. And then that same summer, we went out to the fair to demonstrate for Lou. And I could not do the flax wheel. I mean, that was like patting your stomach and rubbing your head at the same time. I was not that well coordinated. I could demonstrate on the wool wheel, but I couldn't demonstrate on the flax wheel. And she'd go off to listen to the Bluegrass Alliance or some other group that was singing, and people would come out, well, show us how to work that wheel. I said, you'll have to wait until my daughter gets back. I can't show you. She'd come back, she'd just treadle away and spin away, and I'd feel so stupid.
And sing.
Sing. Oh, yeah. Time. The louder the music, the faster she would go.
And that same bluegrass group would just sit there and time the music.
Yeah. She could do it, too, but...
As you look back on your experience of weaving, what do you think the value was in it?
At the time, I don't think we realized all the values it was giving us, but I think that later on in life, we saw a lot of them. I know especially when I was in school and they would be teaching that period of history, it gave you more of you could relate to that period better because you had done something that those people had done. The act of what you were doing and the atmosphere, like the outhouse, it made you relate better to history. I know it gave me some personal values too, and that it gave it made you feel special to know how to do something different. It gave me a lot of self-confidence and made me feel like I was a special little kid that I knew how to do something different from the other kids in school.
Yeah, I can you know, it's always a good project. Mom, will you come weave for us or spin for us, you know? And the time we were out at the fair, being so small, and, you know, all the people that are coming by, oh, look at what they're doing. And being on, what did we say about TV? Yeah. And being on TV, too. I remember one time we were out at a park,
Joe
Creason Park, and it was a fair. And they had a reporter out there, and they filmed me spinning, and they had it on behind the weather report, and it was neat to turn on TV, and there I was, and it was just something that, like she said, that was different, that not many people knew how to do.
And what about the time that the educational television came out there and filmed the spinning and got short in your classroom?
I was in second grade, and it was a whole half hour presentation, and they kind of went through the history. You know, this is weaving, this is spinning, and I was doing the spinning part, and then they would show it. They showed it for several years in the school system. I know they showed it the year I was in second grade, and I can remember, even after junior high, probably people coming and saying that they had seen it.
And we've demonstrated several fairs and things since then, too.
Yeah. Well, 2 years ago, or maybe it was last summer, we were in the sheep to shawl contest at the fair. We hadn't
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago, and we hadn't done any of it for a while. Being, you know, as we got older, school and work and all that kind of stuff, but we kind of got together a team and entered that, and we came in third. It's only five groups. It was just a good time. And also, another thing was, I was around a lot of adults, because there were some kids that were out there, but I was around a lot of adults, and I think that helped. I don't know if this relates, but it helped me to relate to an adult, because I had something in common with an adult, and I could talk to them.
Tell me about the making of the film, where it took place.
Okay, it was mainly up around the upper house. I don't know. What do they call the upper house?
Top house.
Okay, top house, that's right. It was in front of top house and the like patio area.
Dirt patio.
Huh?
Dirt patio.
The dirt patio, you know. The best part I can remember is my wheel was over to the left as you were looking at the house. And I can remember my thread breaking right when they would zoom in on me, and I had to pretend like it was really working. But I just remember there were a lot of people on the cameras, and it took a long time to get all the footage for it.
How did you feel when the filming was going to be taking place?
I can remember being excited. Usually, whether we were out there or any place really would be demonstrating, a camera would usually show up because it's not something that you see all the time. And so, you know, like the people that were watching the weather report that time that I was on, it was like, oh, wow, that's something, you know, something new and different. But I know I was very proud when they showed it in my second grade class, you know, there I am on TV doing this neat thing. But when it was happening, it was exciting, and people were, you know, I think there was a certain amount of pride that was in it, that we were showing other people something that was different.
And it was fun to go teach them. Yeah. We used to go to classrooms or different places with our mother or with someone else to teach other kids or to teach adults or to teach whoever. It was fun, too, to be able to share that with the other people.
Don't you think it was kind of fun for a kid to be able to teach an adult something?
Yeah. We have workshops up at church, and mother would be in charge of them, but we would, you know, come in and say, well, we'll help you out, you know. That was fun.
Now, really adults, looking back, try to remember what you thought Lou Tate was like when you first met her. You've described the cabins. And her teaching methods.
Well, I know later on they told us there were problems and stuff, but as a kid, I can only remember her being helpful to us and, you know, encouraging us. She was always real friendly. She was sometimes a little strange, maybe, but to me she was always helpful and encouraging and someone I liked.
Yeah, there was always certain things, though, that you, I mean, you just didn't go to the bottom cabin. You just never did that. And she was always helpful to me and encouraged. I can't really remember that well, but she must have been doing something right, because I learned it, and I did some, you know, neat things with it, and I was good enough to show other people, so she must be doing something right.
Did she ever discuss the history of whatever it was you all were doing? Did she incorporate any special methods with her teaching?
I think sometimes they might, like when we got older, they'd talk about different patterns and stuff that were particular to things, or the adults, I think, learned more about the history of the patterns and how what the different patterns came from, but I don't ever remember when we were really little her incorporating much history into it.
I think it was just, you know, your basic things you'd say to a kid, you know, the pioneers used to do this out in the plains, but I don't ever remember her sitting down and, you know, giving a talk on this is why you're doing this, and, you know, I think a lot of the history that I got from it was just from the adults that were around it, and then later on as I, you know, grew up, but I was so small when I was around her, because after a while, I don't know why, but after a while we just didn't go out there anymore.
You learned how to weave, you learned how to spin.
Right.
What other kinds of things did you learn how to do at the loom house?
We learned how to dye after the material, after we weave the material. What?
Not dye physically.
Yeah. It was great.
What was that like?
It was fun. Because the people that would do, I mean, you just see this big bed of this dark mess, and you put your t-shirt or whatever it is into it, and it'd come out really neat, and you could tie knots in it or put rubber bands around it so the dye couldn't get on that part of the material and make different designs, and that, it was just kind of fun to do that part of it. I mean, it was hot to do that part, though, over the bats.
Did anyone teach you about how the whole process worked?
Ed Dina did a lot of that. And then when we got older and we'd go to other, like to other people's farms or for different events, for different things, we'd go traipsing off in the woods and we'd get the stuff, the goldenrod or whatever, ourselves and take it back. And so you were starting from the very weed yourself. I can remember driving along with Mom or somebody sometime, and they stopped the car in the middle of the highway and pulled over and run over to the field, and we're pulling up little roots or whatever that we were going to use and dyeing the next time.
And when of course, y'all were very embarrassed when I did it too. It sounds good now, but then you like to dye.
And when the tornado came through, the Osage orange trees that were knocked out at the seminary went over there. Can we have your wood chips, please? Yeah, and so we carried home a bunch of wood chips, and I used that as part of a science fair project.
Yeah, please, man, this crazy woman over here. House gets blown away, and she's over here picking up tree limbs.
There was another person with the dying, Russ Conklin. He did a lot of that.
Tell me about some of the other adults you met through the Little Loom House.
One I remember was Sarah Bailey. She's from maybe the southeastern part of Kentucky.
Near Harlan.
Near Harlan, Kentucky. And
Reezy Four.
She was the one that taught on the wool wheel while Brother Kim was on the flax wheel. And she was always good natured and spirited, and she was to spinning what Lou was to the weaving part of it, I would say.
Tell about going to visit Sarah.
Oh, she was a very loving, warm person, and she invited us up to her house up in Kentucky. They were having a spinning bee up
Bledsoe
there.
Bledsoe is really the name
of
Bledsoe,
Kentucky.
At Pine Mountain.
Invited us up there, and she had us all stay at her house, and she'd cook us these really big meals, and this was just like, to me, way out in the country. I mean, they had real animals in the yard and everything. We tried to ride her donkey, and they had chickens.
Cut his hand. Remember that? And the guy fell down the side of the mountain.
It was way up in the country, but she was just a real warm, loving, jolly type of person, and she used to tell us about how she would knit woolen socks out of the wool that she had spun, and they would wear them and things.
Well, we did it for fun. It was a part of her life more, because it was something that she would actually use, and
made
we just kind of we were more novelty spinners, and she was used it.
Well, she's been on. There was a program on educational TV recently with her, and how she has taught a lot of people different kinds of crafts, and this was one. Hey, tell about the time we were spending at the fair, and you asked Brother Kim to come home with us.
I don't remember that. I remember you telling me about what I said, but.
Well, Brother Kim was helping demonstrate, and of course he's a monk at St. Mandry's. So he is standing there demonstrating on the wool wheel and talking. All these people are standing around, and we were trying to figure out what we were going to do with him that night. So we decided we'd ask him home to stay with us. And I said, hey, you want to go ask Brother Kim to come home with us? And she went over right in front of all these people and says, Brother Kim, you want to go home and spend the night with me in my bunk beds? He just kept spinning, went right back behind the curtains, and everybody just died laughing.
I was only 8 years old or nine. I don't do this often.
But it was funny. He has enjoyed telling that story lots of times.
Oh, I bet.
He also told me several years later he thought I never was going to learn how to do that flax wheel. He was really pleased when he finally saw I could do it.
I can remember doing a lot of other things out there besides just spinning and weaving. I can remember, working in her yard, raking leaves, pulling weeds, that kind of thing. I always thought, I was a little kid and I was supposed to do all those things, I can remember that there was a road up above the top house that you could climb up to. There were a lot of rocks and things. I can remember building like a dam or a wall or whatever to reroute water or whatever. I don't know if it had anything important to do with anything, but let's see.
The water was washing down.
Yeah.
And actually, we're clearing out for some houses, I think, up there.
Yeah, I do remember that there was construction.
That was also when the tenant's house was shifting on its foundations.
It was always, you know, there were a lot of interesting things to go out there. I mean, why did we stop going out there?
Well, that's it's kind of complicated. Because Lou was complicated. She was not an easy person to understand. Some of the things that went on with the adults, the kids didn't know about at all. She had her own way of managing things. She wanted things done her way, and she would not follow through with the whole process about anything. You'd go out there for one thing, and you thought you were going to do this next week, and you'd come back, and she'd have some other thing in mind for you to do. And it took a lot of patience to try to learn something from her sometimes, because she wouldn't follow through with what she had. She never wanted you to learn anything from any other source. It had to be through her. She never recommended books. She wanted you to work on her kind of loom. When I got my looms from home, she wasn't too enthused about that. But it came to a head, and we quit going out there because just finally decided I didn't need the hassle. There was some conflict over the spinning bee we'd had helped Sarah Bailey with and the results of that. We had tried to inquire into how things were organized and make suggestions about a different way of handling things, and she didn't care for that at all. So she backed off, and I cooled off, and I left, and haven't been back there after since. Just decided I didn't need the hassle of being made to feel like nobody thought any of my opinions were worthwhile, when I knew I had a lot more capacity to do than she was letting me do. And then I got busy teaching and doing other stuff, and we organized Fleece and Flax Guild, people who had been out there, some, and then other people who were interested in spinning and weaving. And it was a freer atmosphere than what she had been willing to let us do. Of course, you know, the reason I wanted to go out there in the first place was because as a child we had a loom at home and I wove. We lived in a government project in the 30s that was built in the 30s as an effort to get factory workers out of the city where they could do subsistence farming in case we ever had another depression. And they taught crafts, and we had a loom set up at home, and we did rag rugs. And I always thought this was great fun. It was a huge loom. I couldn't reach from one side to the other and throw the shuttle. And I always wanted to do it again. We took the loom down, and I always wanted to do it again. And when the government got out of the business, my older sister bought one of the looms and stored it at home. And so after y'all were born and I found out about Lou and we went out there, Shirley said I could have that loom. And when I got it, I asked Mother how old I was when we took it down, because I remember that was a big deal. And we took it down for put Becky's baby bed up, my younger sister, who was born when I was 7 and a half.
Where did we get the other one?
Well, when I went looking in the barn for the first one that had been moved from the basement to the barn, I found parts to this other one. So I said, well, can I have this one too? And Mother said, well, now that belongs to the Home Demonstration Club. You will have to call Mally Brandon and see if you can have it. So I tried to call Mally Brandon, this neighbor out there, and she wasn't home. And Daddy says, take it. If anybody says anything about it, I'll charge them storage for the last 20 years. So that's where I got the other one. And it was, you know, it was fun. We had those here at the house, and we still have them. The loom I have from Lou Tate, your daddy bought for me, because she liked men better than women, and they could get more. I know women who waited several years to buy a loom, and she'd find one excuse after another why they couldn't have one, but your daddy asked her for one, and she sold it to him. And
was there any kind of limited supply on them, or could she get as many made as she wanted? Wasn't it made for her?
Yeah, Mr. Heimerdinger. But she didn't tell us who made them for a long time. Long time before we found out that there was really a person who made those. I didn't know where they came from. You know, well, maybe he didn't have time to make them or something. Of course, she had all those stored out there. And when she decided to sell you one, she'd sell you one. And I got a four harness. I mean, that was big stuff. You'd be able to get a four harness instead of a two harness. But if your daddy hadn't done it, you know, this will be a surprise for me for Christmas. That's how I got it.
You're also a member of the Hobby Weavers.
Uh-huh.
Tell about the beginning of the Hobby Weavers.
Well, I went around the beginning of the Hobby Weavers.
When did it start?
Well, it's over 25 years old because I remember when we had the 25th anniversary, and that's been several years ago. I could look it up, but I don't remember exactly. They left because of difficulties out there. In fact, she was in the group when it first started, but eventually they parted company. She always used to talk about the Kentucky Weavers.
And the Kentucky Weavers Jr.
Yes, but always wondered what these, you know, they were the elite group. I always wondered how you got in it. Never did find out too much about it until I found out something from Hobby Weavers after I joined them. They are, most of the people who were in it, who went out there in the 40s and all with her, are dying off now. I mean, there's some still active, but of course, this is 85 and they went out there in the 40s. That's been a long time ago. But they're very active, or have been very active in the past.
I want you to tell me about the spinning wheel.
Okay. We learned how to spin on a log wheel, a flax wheel, and on a wall wheel, which is the walking wheel. You know, they tell the story that you walk 25 miles a day if you spun all day long on a walking wheel. And then Lou ordered some kits from New Zealand called the Ashford wheel, and a bottle kit from her, and Paul and I stained it and put it together. And I've used that wheel a lot. It's easier to spin on a new wheel because the parts usually work. When you get an antique wheel, sometimes they're warped or so forth. I was fortunate this last year. I got a wheel that had belonged to my great-grandmother, a walking wheel, and it works beautifully. I put a band on it and it spins. The original corn chucks that held the spindle on were broken, and so I've got to repair those, but the other day I just braided some yarn and used it for a holder to demonstrate for a story hour to go along with the puppet show about Sleeping Beauty, so they'd know what a spindle was as she pricked her finger off. Now this is one thing you can tell kids when you're showing. You've heard about Rumpelstiltskin. Well, I can't spin straw into gold, but I can spin wool into yarn. And kids are always fascinated with this. And they will ask you questions where the parents stand back and will say, I don't remember my grandmother doing that, or something like that. I never saw anybody do that before. But we had some good times with things out there. And you have some pictures here that show the girls when they were little doing that. One of these is AA and Sally Moss out in front of Wisteria Cabin. Looks like AA's spinning on a flax wheel. I can't see that too well. I don't remember her spinning flax, but she's spinning on something, best I can tell. It is a flax wheel. She may have been spinning wool, and the flax was just there for decoration. Another picture with Melanie has on big rubber gloves when they were dying one time when Adina's was having a dye. Mary Dan Meese was another person who worked a lot with dyes, and she was out there a few times that I remember. And another, Melanie's dipping or something in a dye pot or getting something out of the dye pot. This is kind of down behind one of the houses. Lou had conflicts with her neighbors over what they called her weeds and she called her dye plants. And she had a lot of wildflowers, a lot of jungles. It was a beautiful place to be in the spring. I never could understand why the neighbors got upset over the way the yard looked, just because it wasn't full of grass. Grass on that hillside would have been a major problem anyway. Some of these pictures were taken by Lee Ebner, and there were some others. He took a good many pictures out there at different occasions, and we bought these from him, the two big ones.
This is the end of Side 1, Tape 1, the interview with Amelia Davisman, A.A. Davisman, and Melanie Davisman.